News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
It's 6:30 a.m. It's News Talk Breakfast Business on Wednesday, June 28th. I'm Jack Horgan-Jones. Quick look at the headlines from this morning's business pages. Two stories dominate your morning papers. Firstly, that €2.4 billion fine imposed by the EU on Google yesterday for anti-competitive breaches. In the Irish Times, Carlin Lillington writes that the fine shows that Europe is willing to take up the digital era antitrust watchdog role largely abandoned by the US. While in the Indo, Adrian Weckler comments that Google's chances of winning an appeal are pretty slim. Damning evidence, he says, persuasively showed Google gives its own systems a boost compared to its digital shopping competitors. The other story that's hard to get away from this morning is AIB. In the Indo, Donal O'Donovan reports that AIB won't be expanding overseas for another 3 years at least, while Joe Brennan and Fiona Redden in the Irish Times focus on a dip in the Irish bank's share price yesterday, which closed down 1.5 cents. A couple of interesting stories outside of those. In the Irish Times, Cliff Taylor reports that Central Bank Governor Philip Lane has strongly defended his organisation's stance on Brexit investments. In a strongly worded letter to Fine Gael Senator Neil Richmond, who chairs the Brexit Committee, Lane pointed out that the promotion of financial services had been removed from the bank's mandate post-crash, a call he thinks was the correct decision, a clear shot across the bows of the government from the governor there. The papers also cover the spread of a new cyber attack in Ireland. The Irish operations of several multinationals have been compromised by the Petya virus, including pharma giant MSD and shipping heavyweight Maersk. And there'll be more on that on News Talk Breakfast over the next couple of hours. Now, Ireland has always been an economy that relies on experts, but that is becoming increasingly complex territory to navigate. Tomorrow, the Entrepreneurship Export Exchange, or E3, conference in Dublin will ask what Irish companies can do to jump to the top of the export queue. The conference is being organised by Enterprise Ireland and US consultancy, the Global Situation Room. I'm joined by Situation Room President Brett Bruin to discuss. Brett is a former Director of Global Engagement at the White House, where he headed up everything from crisis communications to tackling Russian propaganda for President Obama. First up, Brett, let me ask you, how worried should Irish exporters be about the global political situation as it currently stands?
I think they should be less worried and more prepared. There are enormous opportunities, given the uncertainty and the changes that are taking place. I think particularly in the U.S., what we're seeing is a shifting of the balance of what countries, what companies are dominating. And that opens up doors for Irish firms. And I think increasingly, I saw last month when I spoke at Enterprise Ireland's conference on North America, that Irish firms are looking across the Atlantic, and they're interested to understand how they can enter. And there really is no better time, because the U.S. is going to get more and more complex. And now is the moment, I think, for Irish firms.
Would you agree that the mood music isn't exactly encouraging, though? I mean, with the election of President Trump, this kind of protectionist narrative, America first, buy American. If you're an Irish exporter, particularly a small or medium-sized exporter looking across the Atlantic, you won't be overly encouraged, will you?
But you have to really go beneath some of those headlines. And in fact, President Trump, I was at a conference just a couple of weeks ago with Secretary of Commerce Will Ross, and he said, we want a free trade agreement with the EU. We want to move forward on this TTIP agreement. And I think that's very encouraging, both for Ireland and the EU. And that's an opportunity that Irish firms should seize.
Because, of course, TTIP, which was controversial in its own way, even when the White House under Obama was behind it, was one of the things that President Trump said he was going to move away from. Effectively, are we looking at that being a piece of campaign trail rhetoric, something that his administration, particularly Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, may back away from?
I think what they're interested in doing is putting their mark on it. And they're going to need to show not only that they can renegotiate old treaties like NAFTA, they need to show that they can put on the table new treaties. And clearly, they're prioritizing the EU market for a whole variety of reasons.
Mm. How about things like the border adjustment tax and that kind of broad, as I say, protectionist corporate tax agenda? Again, something that was a big part of the campaign trail, something we haven't seen a huge amount of action on since he came into office. What do you think the chances are of those things getting through?
Most observers in Washington will tell you that it's not going to happen, that it's more bluster. And again, I think you need to understand there's a certain amount of red meat that's being thrown to some of the
appealing to the base, I think it's called.
Exactly. But that does not necessarily mean that just because there's a policy statement about it, that it's going to be implemented.
Mm. Let's get down into the nitty-gritty here, move away from the high politics of the situation. At a kind of pragmatic, practical level, if I'm an Irish exporter, what should I be doing? What should be on my to-do list if I'm looking to export to the US?
You have to break down what are essentially 50 different markets and figure out where in the US you want to go and which market's going to give you the best deal. I think a lot of Irish firms tend to gravitate to big markets that they know, like New York, Silicon Valley, Boston, and yet those are the most expensive, the most competitive, and quite frankly, the markets that are going to give you the least. What's important for Irish firms to do is to negotiate and to figure out where in the U.S. a state government, a city government is willing to roll out the red carpet, and I think there are a number of governments willing to do so.
That's an interesting point. I mean, to move away from the national level and go and start knocking on doors at City Hall or in state legislatures, how important are those connections?
Without question, those are the factor that will make the difference in whether or not you are given a supportive environment or whether you've got to fight against some of the headwinds. And so we've got some officials coming tomorrow from states like Minnesota and Mississippi to talk about what they're willing to do. And I think a number of Irish firms have found that the U.S. Local governments are willing to do an awful lot.
What else might firms be able to expect at the conference tomorrow?
I think what they're going to see are the perspectives of a number of experts, ranging from the Irish Times U.S. correspondent through to professors from leading U.S. universities, looking at what are some of the latest business trends and tactics that are being used to break into the U.S. market.
Okay. Fascinating stuff. Brett Bruin of the Global Situation Room and the E3 conference in Dublin. Thanks very much. You're very welcome back to News Talk Breakfast Business, where the time is now 6:44. I'm Jack Horgan-Jones. Now, the latest figures released this morning by real estate agent Sherry Fitzgerald show that the average value of Irish houses and apartments rose by 2.5% in the second quarter of the year, or 4.4% in the year to date. I'm joined on the line by Marion Finnegan, who's chief economist with Sherry Fitzgerald, to discuss this. Marion, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
First of all, Marion, at a high level, briefly talk us through what your numbers are telling you about the housing market.
Okay, well, there's quite a few different statistics coming out this morning. I suppose there's some very good news overall. If you look at the marketplace, we're seeing that the volume of transactions, which is a good indicator of the health of the market, is up about 9% nationwide and up about 10% in Dublin. That's based on the first quarter figures, which is the most up-to-date that we have.
So literally more houses being sold?
More houses being sold. And even more positively, you delve into those figures and you look at the new home sector only. The number of new homes and apartments that have sold nationwide in the quarter are up 23% and in Dublin is up 33%. So that's a good indicator of a more healthier market there again. Mm. The average value of a new home on a nationwide basis is up 8%, while the average value of a new home sold in Dublin has remained flat in the quarter. So again, if you focus in on the initiatives that have taken place in the marketplace, that's an indicator that we're seeing more lower valued homes being completed and sold and keeping that marketplace flat.
Seeing as we're talking about new home sales, Marion, I'm minded to mention the Help to Buy scheme.
Yes.
Obviously a little bit controversial, and there's a lot of suggestions around at the moment that it's going to be junked. Do you think that it's done its job so far?
I think, first of all, it's very hard to review a scheme like the New Home Scheme, Help to Buy scheme, which was designed to encourage activity after a few months, because it's very, you know, you need to give it more time than that. But a very quick look at the figures that we've seen this morning would suggest that we're seeing more new home sales and that the average values of those have remained relatively flat. That's a success story from a new home's perspective. Now, it's early days. You'll have to keep an eye on it, but it does indicate that it is doing as it was supposed to do, albeit at the early stages. The other sort of interesting trend there looks at the mortgage market. So we've been worried about the cash levels in the marketplace for quite some time.
Yeah, I noticed this myself. I noticed some interesting figures on cash purchases. Talk me through them.
So typically we've been worried that half the market has been bought with cash for the last few years. Indeed, in the first quarter of last year, it was 48% of all all house transactions were bought with cash. This year, that figure is down to 43%. And again, if you think of the initiatives that took place at the end of last year with the relaxation around the macroprudential policy rules, that does indicate less cash, therefore more mortgages. Again, that suggests that's doing what it was supposed to do, which is a positive news
effectively, story. Effectively, previously, ordinary consumers were kind of being crowded out of the market by professional investors. Would that be fair to say?
And well, these are on single transactions, so it's not even professional investors. It's more that perhaps the availability of mortgage for certain cohorts like first-time buyers was quite restricted. And now as that has been freed up, they're a bigger proportion of the marketplace, so that the cash element is a less proportion of the marketplace. And typically cash purchasers are either high net worth individuals buying very expensive property or investors buying properties throughout the country which are lower in value. But the increase in first-time buyer element is pushing that cash piece down, which is again an indicator that that macroprudential policy rule changes is doing as it expected to do.
So both Help to Buy and the MPR changes seem to be working. Both of the things will be reviewed respectively at the budget and at the Central Bank's November review of the MPRs. Would you put yourself in the shoes of the government and the Central Bank governor? Would you keep both those twin afterburners firing, or do you think there's a risk of maybe property prices getting too high again?
Okay, there's always risks in any marketplace, but what I would do is keep both of them under review, and I'd look at the purpose that they were brought in and what they were brought in to achieve. And on the basis of the very early data that we have, I would be happy to keep them in place. I think they are doing as they should do. Now, the wider marketplace is still not doing exactly as we want it to do. So we are still seeing, you know, modest and increasingly high levels of inflation in that market. But again, we have to remember where we are in a cycle. You know, we've got a very, very strong economy, very, very strong demographic demand, and we're only now getting those supply levels back up. So we did open the year with very, very tight levels of second-hand stock in the marketplace. For Dublin, in fact, it was down 30% year on year. So it's not surprising that we have, you know, a very strong level of inflation coming through. But it has to be said that the level of inflation in the Dublin marketplace is almost identical to the rest of the market. So overall, in the year to date, Ireland is up 4.4%, Dublin marginally ahead of 4.7%. And bearing in mind where we are in that cycle, those figures are not surprising. We need to give supply the time to come through in order to allow those to come back down.
Great stuff. Thanks very much, Marion Finnegan. We're back after these. You're very welcome back to News Talk Breakfast Business. The time is 6:53. I'm Jack Horgan-Jones. On to markets now, and I'm joined by Aidan Donnelly of Davy Stockbrokers. Morning, Aidan.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Let's start by looking back at yesterday's action. It may be early in Pascal Donoghue's term, but he's already seeming to be something of a trendsetter. The Dutch government announcing the sale of a stake in ABN AMRO just after we get AIB away. Talk us through
what you're seeing there. Yeah, the announced just after the closure yesterday evening. The Dutch government own about 70%, so they're a little bit further down the road in terms of selling off their stakeholdings. But they own about 70% of ABN now, so they announced after the close that they were going to sell 7% of the company in a placing this morning. The stock closed at just over €23. They're going to place it just under, they've announced a range of 22.70 to 22.75, so a very tight range. They obviously know they can get it away. It's obviously a very accelerated thing. They'll do it today and it'll all be done. But I suppose, again, it's just something we're going to start, we're going to continue to see now for the next while. And obviously there's a story in
yeah, let's dwell on that for a second. Why is now a good time for banks to be sold? I mean, obviously yesterday we had Draghi's comments seeming a bit more hawkish. That sent banks a bit higher, but it's not just that alone.
No, I think it reflects the fact that, you know, in a lot of cases the European banks are through the worst of it. There's a lot of state ownership, and this is not, you know, governments by their nature are not long-term owners of the banks that operate within their countries, and therefore they want to have some sort of a program. And I think you know, there has been a reasonably good backdrop to banks over the last, even the last 9 to 12 months. So I think it's about just slowly but surely getting that process going. And, you know, where, as I often say, you don't sell them when you want to, you sell them when the market wants them. And if the market wants them, you begin to feed it out. Now, you know, obviously at the weekend we saw the Italian bank situation is slightly different. Money's going in there. But you know,
something that the market took in its stride.
Exactly. It's not as if it's new news to them. You know, we've seen this process before. They know the script, and, you know, in a little few years' time, I'm sure the Italian banks are going to be selling.
The other big market news yesterday, Nestle. Talk us through.
Yeah, Nestle announced after market close yesterday that they were going to do a 20 billion Swiss franc buyback, share buyback, over the next couple of years. Now, this really is on the back of the announcement earlier this week that an activist shareholder, a large US activist shareholder, Third Point. It's headed up by a guy called Dan Loeb. They took a substantial stake in the company, really trying to shake it up and get the management to start doing value creation.
Well, they're listening, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they are. This is the first one now. Interestingly enough, Dan Loeb came out after hours and said, that's nice, but it ain't enough and I want more. So, we'll see. This is step one, I'd say, in a long, long process.
Cool. Now, listen, it's a little bit quiet on the markets this week, so we're going to take a thematic look at the retail sector. You think that we're far from seeing the demise of bricks and mortar. What's the evidence from the markets for
well,
that?
Well, I think the real evidence from this is if you look at the share price reactions over the last few weeks, the last 2 weeks since Amazon announced its Whole Foods acquisition, you know, a lot of the food retailers' tailing stocks have gotten significantly hit. And I think, you know, everybody's saying, oh, Amazon are moving into food retail and that's going to be the end to the brick and mortar guys. Well, I would argue that the fact that they're buying a brick and mortar food retailer probably tells you that the truth is somewhere in between.
And
you know?
it also shows that it's difficult for digital native companies to bust into retail.
Yeah, I think when you look at the initial phase of online retail, it was all about online, online, online. But I think as consumers, we're now saying, well, look, we can't be home all the time to receive these packages. We all work, we're out of the house, things like that. So there has to be alternative ways of getting the package to us. And whether it's click and collect or whether it is the likes of Parcel Motel, we've seen all of these extra services build up around it, that it's not going to be about either brick and mortar or online. It's this multi-channel approach. And you need to have some sort of brick and mortar element in order to do a multi-channel. We've seen all the big retailers do it. Amazon's probably the last one in now. So I think when you actually look at it, it's about getting the offering that suits the consumer best and makes it easier for the consumer.
You'd be a buyer of retail stocks?
Yeah, I think there's certain very, very good players that we've seen, both in Europe and in the US, that have good multi-channel offerings and have seen their share prices getting hit in the back of this. And I think there's definitely opportunities.
Good
there.
Value there. Aidan Donnelly of Davy Stockbrokers, many thanks for joining us this morning. That's it for Breakfast Business for this morning. If you missed any of this morning's show, you can listen back to the podcast online later this morning at newstalk.com/podcast.
Newstalk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.